All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Friday, September 30th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday, everyone. It is a very damp and chilly 57 degrees and cloudy here in upstate New York. Looks like we are going to have an entire weekend of rain coming. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Tech Billionaires, CRISPR, Directed Evolution, and Eugenics. And we talked about every single one of those things, good old Georgie Church and some of his synthetic biology that has been spinning out into the mainstream. Bill Gates working with gene drives and genetically modifying mosquitoes, all in the name of curing malaria and passing traits that would limit reproduction into an entire species. And that's kind of where we tied into the eugenics piece of this. There was a story that came out of the Washington Post probably about a week or so ago that really kind of tried to distinguish between two technologies, one being called genetic engineering and one being called eugenics. And eugenics, of course, would be to completely edit, change, manipulate a population to be able to create or remove traits, whether they be desirable or undesirable. And the ethical questions remain: who gets to make those decisions? And that's really what we're dealing with now with this 21st century medicine. We have this precision medicine initiative that is being run out of the very top law of the land. The White House is fully 100% behind it. And they have now dictated and put money where their mouth is and said that precision medicine is going to be the economic engine for the 21st century. As they're pushing this 21st Century Cures Act that is sitting in Congress, they right now are determining whether or not that FDA, an FDA that we found out never really keeps us safe, but that FDA, they say, is in the way of these 21st century cures. And so they are really pushing now to remove this, to go direct to consumer. And that is kind of where the biggest concern is, because right now there is no safety. We've determined that in these labs, I mean, yeah, they have safety, but bio level safety is not necessarily happening like it should be. These potential tools can be considered by some of the top intelligence officials in the United States to actually be a weapon of mass destruction. And that's really kind of where we have been seeing this heading. You know, this technology is not only being utilized in the United States, it is being utilized globally. CRISPR gene editing has been democratized and sent across the planet, and there are no rules. There is no one watching the entire store to see what is going on. So here, out of MIT Technology Review, February 9th, 2016, top U.S. intelligence official calls gene editing a WMD threat. Easy to use, yes. Oh, CRISPR, splice and dice in mommy's garage and back bedroom, but hard to control. The intelligence community now sees CRISPR as a threat to national safety. Ding! So guys, remember, everything is all about keeping you safe. All these millimeter wave scanners they're going to be doing us up with, and they're CRISPR in humans to be able to cure disease and make you live forever. But oh my goodness, it is now a threat to national security. Genome editing is a weapon of mass destruction. And this is everything that we've been talking about. The fact that you have gene drives, you have people like Bill Gates and Mark Zuckerberg and Microsoft and Google all involved from the top ends, 23andMe, National Institute of Health, and every other lunatic, good old Georgie Church, Harvard Broad Institute, the DOD that now has their tech division where they've sucked in corporate America to be able to help them solve real world problems with technology. Guys, we have a real problem on our hands. This is that double-edged sword. You know, we've talked about all the quote unquote wonders that these tech billionaires think are going to come from their investment in longevity medicine. But now let's look at the sharper, pointier side that's covered with blood. Anyway, genome editing is a weapon of mass destruction. That is according to James Clapper, U.S. Director of National Intelligence, who on Tuesday in February of 2016, at the annual Worldwide Threat Assessment of the U.S. Intelligence Community, added gene editing to a list of threats posed by, quote, weapons of mass destruction and proliferation. Gene editing refers to several novel ways to alter DNA inside of living cells. Remember, we found out yesterday, too, they've been messing around with those two new amino acids, X and Y. And again, not male and female X and Y. I'm certain they have called them the same things as male and female X and Y, just to confuse people. No, these are X and Y. These are foreign, quote-unquote, alien amino acids that have never, ever been seen before in any living organism. And we found out what in potentially the solar system or the universe even. There's no living creature that we know of that has these two amino acids. They are man-created. And they can be put into a DNA strand and made to reproduce, which is even more frightening. Don't worry about that. We're just going to use it to create drugs. We're just going to use it to do things that will cure you. All in the name of keeping you safe and moving us forward with this insane technology that nobody really understands in the long run. Not only how is it going to affect us, but nobody's watching the store. I'm going to say it again. It is hubris. It is technology in front of common sense. It is about being published and being the first one to come up with a study, getting funding dollars, and then spinning it out to an IPO, initial public offering, if you don't know what that is, to be able to create a new company and put stock on the market, make $1 billion, and then become a new tech company that becomes involved with this newly formed technocracy that is dropping on top of us. Gene editing refers to several novel ways to alter the DNA inside of living cells. And the most popular method, good old CRISPR, has been revolutionizing scientific research, leading to novel animals and crops, and is likely to power a new generation of gene treatments for serious diseases. Ding. CRISPR in humans. It is the gene editing's relative ease of use that worries U.S. intelligence community, according to this assessment, given the broad distribution. Yeah, 60,000 copies, and you can copy it endlessly, and you don't get any lostness. But that's okay. Don't worry about it. We democratized it all. The low cost and the accelerated pace of development of this dual-use technology, and I think dual-use is a really nice way of saying double-edged sword. It is a curing machine, and it is a killing machine. Remember, George Church said before it ever cured anything or created anything, it was killing things by unzipping DNA. Just like those millimeter waves can, as discovered by the scientist at Los Alamos Laboratory in 2009. But don't worry about that either. I'm just going to put it all in the sky. And by the way, I do have a new CubeSat story. CubeSats around the moon. Well, look at that. We're going to go into some space today. The choice by the U.S. spy chief to call out gene editing as a potential weapon of mass destruction surprised some experts. Not me. Not you. I guess biopharma apparently didn't offer Clapper enough money as a lobby to get him to shut his mouth. I don't know. I was actually kind of surprised as well. It was the only biotechnology appearing in the tally of six more conventional threats, like North Korea's suspected nuclear detonation on January 6th, Syria's undeclared serial chemical weapons, and the new Russian missile cruise missiles that might violate an international treaty. The report is an unclassified version of the collective insights of the Central Intelligence Agency, the National Security Agency, and half a dozen other U.S. spy and fact-gathering operations. Although the report doesn't mention CRISPR by name, Clapper clearly had the newest and most versatile of the gene editing systems in mind, the CRISPR techniques, low cost and relative ease of use. And the basic ingredients, by the way, can be bought online for just $60, seem to have spooked intelligence agencies. Quote, research in genome editing conducted by countries with different regulatory or ethical standards than those of Western countries, ding, 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 China, as well as many others. And, you know, just think about the rogue threats. There are people literally messing with this technology in mommy's back bedroom. We read about the dude in Long Island. We'll probably increase the risk of the creation of a potentially harmful biological agent or product, the report says. Ding, 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 ding. The concern is that biotechnology is a dual-use technology, meaning normal scientific developments could also be harnessed as weapons. Guys, this is very scary. This stuff is everywhere, okay? This isn't like 300... accidentally thought we killed it, but oops, it was still partially alive anthrax that got shipped all over to other military and research institutions. This is a democratized technology that could be sent out on a postage stamp, thanks Adagene, at 60,000 copies globally to anyone who wanted it, and then can be copied ad nauseum to be utilized and sent out by others. This is very, very frightening. Clapper did not lay out any particular bioweapon scenarios, but scientists have previously speculated about whether CRISPR could be used to make quote-unquote killer mosquitoes. And remember, we read that study by the Japanese scientists turning mosquitoes into flying vaccinators, and we postulated this before. What about if we turn these mosquitoes into flying vaccinators with some sort of bioweapon? Some sort of eugenics bioweapon, Mr. Billy Gates, who really is fascinated by mosquitoes, by the way, to just wipe out lots of people, to put a ticking time bomb inside of you. You know, interesting as well that Microsoft is working on blood nanobots to quote-unquote cure you with synthetic bacteria that goes in and tamps down an inflammation, creates little drugs inside of you, and we got Bill Gates doubling down on his investment in mosquitoes and gene drives, and we find out that mosquitoes can be genetically modified to be flying vaccinators. Now we find out Clapper, head of U.S. intelligence, is presenting a study stating that, yes, well, this same technology can be used as a bioweapon, and some scientists have speculated whether or not CRISPR could be used to make killer mosquitoes. Guys, this is beyond frightening. Get out your DEET. Oh my God, this is insane. Whether it could be used to make killer mosquitoes, plagues that could wipe out our staple crops, and good old Dr. Huber would know all about that, or even create a virus that snips at people's DNA and takes little pieces out, would be very frightening. This report notes that new discoveries move easily in the globalized economy, as do personnel with scientific expertise to design and use them. Biotechnology, more than any other domain, and I have said I think we are in the greatest danger ever as a living species, has great potential for human good. Well, maybe not, but it also has the potential to be misused. And I think that is the cusp that we are at right now. I don't trust these guys as far as you can throw them. That was something that Daniel Gerstein, who was a senior policy analyst at RAND, and former Undersecretary of the Department of Homeland Defense really has a worry about this. We are worried about people developing some sort of pathogen with robust capabilities, but we are also concerned about the chance of misutilization. We could have an accident occur, with a gene editing that is catastrophic, since the genome is the very essence of life. And that's what it comes down to, A, T, C, and G, guys. They are messing with the building blocks of life, A, T, C, and G. And we've even come up with X and Y now to make freaks, freaks of nature that never existed, that can reproduce. Piers Millett, an expert on bioweapons at the Woodrow Wilson Center in Washington, D.C., says Clapper is singling out of the gene editing as an WMD member on the list was a surprise, since making a bioweapon, say an extra virulent form of anthrax, still requires mastery of a wide raft of technologies. Development of bioweapons is banned, of course. Yes, we know, by that weapons convention, the Cold War era treaty that outlawed biological weapons programs. The U.S., China, Russia, and 172 other countries signed it. But Millen says that the experts who met in Warsaw last September to discuss this treaty felt a threat from a terrorist group was still remote, given the complexity of producing a bioweapon. But the group concluded that for the foreseeable future, such applications are only within the grasps of states. Well, yeah, and that was when it was still kind of difficult, but CRISPR tends to be kind of easy. The intelligence assessment drew specific attention to the possibility of using CRISPR to edit the DNA of human embryos. We just read about that in Sweden yesterday. To produce genetic changes in the next generation of people. For example, to remove disease risks. And that's something that they're toying with a lot of different places, including China. It noted that fast advances in genome editing in 2015 compelled groups of high-profile U.S. and European biologists to question the unregulated ding-ding-ding editing of the human germline, which are the cells that are relevant for reproduction and which might create inheritable genetic changes. And guys, I'm telling you, that's exactly what it is all about. And so the debate for over changing the next generation's genes has been mostly an ethical question. The report did not say how such a development would be considered a WMD. Well, it's called a gene drive, guys. Get with the times. Although it is possible to imagine a virus designed to kill or injure people by altering their genomes. So take that for what it is. I don't know, it's a pretty frightening thought. It's everything that I've been kind of raising the red flag about. How scary it could potentially be. And like I said, add to that now all these tech billionaires who are in the process of declaring that they want to spend large amounts of their fortune to quote-unquote cure disease, quote-unquote eliminate species, quote-unquote remove genetic threats from an organism's live building blocks, right? We have CRISPRing humans, of course, as a way to get rid of genetic disease, and they're going after quite a few. I saw, I don't even remember, Gaucher's disease, I think, was one. That might have been the blindness, genetic blindness, but they're already messing with our children. So back to that story about the difference between gene editing and eugenics out of the Washington Post. It says, today CRISPR has captured the fantasies of those who emphasize the high-flying possibilities of human-led evolution. This is where the dangers come in. We just had that very first three-parent child that was announced a few days ago. Kid's like 5 or 6 months old already, and they said he seems to be healthy. Where they were able to take a micro slice of a third person's DNA and put it into the mother's defective DNA to give her a corrected copy of her defective, quote-unquote, defective genes. Us defective humans, remember, nobody's perfect. And things such as stress and smoking and drinking and staying up late and getting angry can all damage your DNA. So how long is it going to take with all these DNA databases everywhere and splicing and dicing precision medicine? We've talked about all that cohort program, stepping right up and helping them determine what each of these building blocks mean and how all these different orderings affect us as living organisms, and then determine which are the good ones and which are the bad ones. Put it all in a database, run an algorithm. Should be pretty easy. But when they determine that your genetic makeup or your child's genetic makeup happens to be faulty, do you get a letter in the mail from your Obamacare practitioner, robot doctor, remotely sending you a text stating that you have been selected to have a gene upgrade? $29.95, Microsoft's going to market it direct to you, licensing agreement once a year. We'll go in, and we are offering now, remember, they're able to program cells just like little applications and computers now. They're able to splice and dice DNA in little chunks, just like reusable code when you're developing applications like in a framework like .NET. Make little reusable chunks of code that you can move in and out and use for different apps. Well, hey, this is the one that fixes that nasty gene. This is the one that fixes that overly active brain gene. I don't know. I mean, pick whatever. Think of the implications of this, and who is going to determine within parameters that you are either acceptable or unacceptable and requiring of an upgrade? And what happens if you decide you don't want an upgrade? Like my Windows 10 computer that is now threatening me that I am so out of hard drive space that it can't function anymore, because that Windows 10 keeps trying to dump an update to the machine and there's no way to turn it off. Yeah, what's going to happen when they start trying to force these upgrades because you cost too much? You know, you with your disability, you with your addiction gene that we can cure now. You know, you smoke, you drink, causes DNA damage. You are going to tax the system, the medical establishment, as well as potentially the police department if you might have psychological issues in the future. We're going to make you get an upgrade. If you want to live on this planet, if you want to continue to partake in this universal basic income that is to be coming as AI and robots take all the jobs, you are going to have to get an upgrade, Charlie. Today, CRISPR has captured the fantasies of those who emphasize the high-flying possibilities of human-led evolution. Some look forward to designer babies, suggesting that altering children to have higher intelligence is inevitable for human progress. This is where we kind of finished up yesterday. Others argue that we should engineer humans so that they have a reduced impact on the environment. And of course, these proposals are still wildly unrealistic, wink. But we're no longer in an era where scientists can shrug off eugenicist rhetoric as too distant to worry about. This month, Britain became the first country to approve public funding for projects that edit the human genome. And at the pace that CRISPR technology is advancing, it is likely the United States and other governments will want to follow suit. Yes, it has now become an arms race. CRISPR has become a weapon, a double-edged sword. We can use it for good. And again, because things are banned under that bioweapons convention pact that 170 some odd countries signed onto, Remember, the way that we got around maintaining our biological warfare program for all the years since we inked that agreement was all in the name of defensive posture, creating vaccines and protections against pathogens. But in the background, they still had to have those pathogens. And by having those pathogens, they could be messing around with how to kill things. It's all about killing. Killing in the name of war. Well, CRISPR has those same capabilities, so let's find ways to cure cancer. Let's make it that dangling golden carrot that when you take a big bite with those little pointy teeth of yours, they're gonna snap right off. But don't worry about it, we can regrow teeth now even. I just saw something about that. Anyway, while 83% of American public is solidly against editing genes for frivolous purposes such as increasing intelligence, but I bet China isn't, by the way. About half of those asked were fine with the idea of doing so to treat diseases. The time to distinguish between negative eugenics and positive genetic intervention is now. But how far are we willing to go? Well, ending truly debilitating diseases may be one thing, but what about conditions such as dwarfism? Current CRISPR research might lead to genetic treatments for autism as well. And given that the possibilities are truly endless, should we edit out traits that many people have come to accept and celebrate? Is there a moral, social, and physical advantage in allowing diversity to flourish within the human gene pool? And in the end, where we draw the line will be a political question. The scientific community has already begun this discussion, but it is not unreasonable to expect a more involved debate in the near future, one in which the general public will have a greater say in how science will proceed. And I'm going to argue that you are absolutely incorrect in that. I don't think that we are going to be given a debate. And I'll tell you why. Because scientists such as George Church was the one who held a secret meeting with 150 scientists at Harvard to discuss whether or not to create the synthetic human genome. And then shortly thereafter, George Church was the one that came out and said, hey, guess what? We decided that we are going to create a synthetic human genome. I didn't see too much public debate on that at all. And we called that out at the time because this technology is nothing to mess around with. And as we dug in looking at laboratories to determine what type of level 4 biosecurity that they had, considering the fact that we read a story about how even fecal bacteria, we walk around with like a little bacterial cloud around us at all times, and namely fecal bacteria can pass on obesity and it is considered contagious. They made that discovery. You have skin bacteria, you have oral bacteria, you have gut bacteria. And they found that within the gut bacteria of people with obesity, they have a overabundance of the quote-unquote bad bacteria. But as you pass gas, let's say, on a subway, you are sharing that gut bacteria with the world in your general vicinity. So what if somebody just gets a real stanky up the nose? And remember, the nose is one of those very helpful pathways for any type of biomaterial that they want to cross that blood-brain barrier. So we found out those little nanoparticles from quote-unquote pollution all got into the brain. But who's to say that in a bio lab, just like gut bacteria can transmit potential obesity to somebody else, even a family member, you share the same bathroom, I mean, there's going to be bacteria around. May even settle on your toothbrush in the bathroom. Horrifying thought. But think about this. If gut bacteria can be passed to someone else and you can pass on something such as obesity, something that simple, that basic of a human function, and they're doing, like, absolute lunatic, insanity in a lab, mixing shit together. And nobody's got any type of bio suit on that I've seen. Like I said, maybe, just maybe, they might put an N95 or an M100 mask on and those Latreille light blue, bright blue gloves. Who's to say that they may not come into contact with something that might even just stick to their skin that they could then carry out of the lab and potentially pass on undetected for a while and be Typhoid Marys that causes a genetic mutation that causes something that could potentially become very dangerous and not have any idea where this genetic anomaly has come from that is being spun out through the population. Just saying, just saying. There are no holes barred right now, and there is research going on everywhere at all corners of the globe on this, and it's whoever gets the most toys wins in the end. But don't worry about it, because all these different types of terrorism, we've kind of looked at biotechnology and self-radicalized internet terrorists under every bed, anyone who can pick up an alter opinion that is different from what the mainstream is pumping out is now considered a potential terrorist. We also have cyber warfare, hackers under every bed. Anyone that is out there who knows something about the internet could potentially be considered a terrorist. They are scanning our activity on everything we use. Every time we get online, we have this whole ICANN transfer that is actually happening tomorrow. I know some in Congress had said that they were going to try to stop it because it wasn't a good thing to hand that whole naming convention of the internet that was something that the United States had been in charge of from the very beginning. We are now handing it off to an international agency to be in charge of. And if we think right now that we have issues on the internet, just wait and see. Remember, too, the FCC called the internet a public utility last year and took control of it as a utility. And they have not, knock on wood, they have not done anything that you can see right in the foreground that I've seen anyway as any new laws or conditions for utilizing the grand internet and soon to be the internet of things and the internet of everything. With CubeSats and plasma bomb in the sky. But the federal government has claimed control over the Wild West, something that I was a part in the beginnings of. Many of us in this Generation X, we're at the very forefront of being online. We are part of the before time. We are the last generation that remembers the world before computers and the very extreme difference that they have made to the lifestyles that we have now in the 21st century versus what we had in the 1980s, let's say. Clinton, Hillary, is now calling for tech firms. Now, as we're seeing that all these technology companies are getting in bed with the feds, Hillary Clinton is now calling on tech firms to help fight terrorism. Ding! Let's bring them all in. As Secretary Ash Carter of the Department of Defense just created his little group of tech cronies that he's bringing in to help the DOD combat the Department of Defense's tactical issues. Help keep us safe. Clinton is now calling for tech firms to help them fight the fight on terrorism. But also, students could be the key. Now, I've talked about this, how they've been going to universities and utilizing our own children against us by sucking them into the machine, by offering them great jobs with dangling carrot money from agencies such as DARPA to do mad science gone mad in a lab, getting them funding from different defense groups to work on new laser technologies or artificial intelligence or robotics, AI. They're sucking our best and our brightest, our loved ones, into their technocracy. Let's get the kids to sign up to be a CIA agent. Let's get them in the NSA. I keep seeing all these ads advertising to kids to sign up for the NSA. You can travel the world and use your technology skills. This week, and this is actually September 23rd, last week, out of the IEEE spectrum, this week, U.S. presidential candidate Hillary Clinton has called for, quote, tech companies and experts online, unquote, to give the United States tools to intercept and prevent online recruiting efforts by terrorist organizations. Guys, self-radicalized over the internet, I'm telling you, this is all in conjunction with handing over ICANN in the global war on terror. We now have a presidential candidate, and both of them, as a matter of fact, talking about clamping down and spying even more so than what we already have. And look up Keith Alexander in that Wired magazine interview by Bamford. Guys, what the capabilities we already have are astonishing. And they're going to step it up a few more notches. According to the LA Times, Clinton made clear that she would put pressure on tech firms. Mind you, these are private companies. Well, public companies, but private companies, not part of the government, but they have literally sucked the tech industry into the bed with them. Guys, this is what's so frightening. It's all tech. Tech, biotech, computer tech, military tech is all under the federal heading now. Clinton made it clear that she would put pressure on tech firms to step up their efforts to root out terrorists. So Microsoft scanning your PC, Google watching your browse history and your emails, Facebook watching your instant posts, your instant messaging, what pages you manage, yes, Twitter, Snapchat, let's scan them all. Clinton sees tech firms as the place to go for the kind of technology the United States needs. But let me suggest, and this is his author for IEEE, that we might get a better source, the tech students themselves. Last spring, this author attended the final presentations of the first ever Hacking for Defense class, in which teams at Stanford University were given real-world problems by the U.S. National Security Agency, the U.S. Army Cyber Command Center, as well as other branches of the government. Guys, those are all Keith Alexander's babies. The member of each team had 10 weeks to bring themselves up to speed on a real-world national security or defense-related problem and then begin working toward a solution. And look, they're getting these kids to do it for free, no less. What a bunch of scumbags. The progress most teams made was impressive, and many pledged to keep going and developing the technologies that they had proposed. Since then, this little Stanford class of 40 people has started a movement. According to Steve Blank, one of the faculty members behind the effort, the organizers of the class held a three-day workshop for other educators looking to teach the class at their schools. And 13 universities have now decided to offer this course with funding provided by the National Defense University in the next year. Guys, they are starting their army of brown shirts, and they're taking our kids as the ranks. This is horrifying. The Stanford group has also obtained commitment from government sponsors, to keep sending challenging problems to the students and worked out a way for the Department of Defense to include classified problems into the mix. And I bet you that somewhere in here, this is part of that new DIU with a small little X program that the Department of Defense has been working through with tech companies It is that first little group where they pulled together a lot of 21st century well-known thinkers, including tech titans, into a DOD think tank. And they have also spun out with that DIUX, its Defense Something Initiative Experimental Program. They are circumventing, I discovered yesterday, that whole FBO.gov process where they will put out a proposal and then everyone gets to bid on it. And then they pick, they don't have to necessarily pick the lowest bidder. They do have to pick somebody, but it has to go out to bid. Can't be written to one vendor. It has to be more general so more than one company can bid on it. But this new DIUX division of the Department of Defense is actually going to circumvent that by offering to anyone and everyone, mostly tech firms, the ability to propose, even if they have not been cleared for doing government business. Blank said in a blog post that as a result of the meetings in the workshop and what they learned during the first pilot class, the faculty has fine-tuned the methodology to be more specific about what students deliver to their sponsors. They're being sponsored. Just like big pharma and drug companies sponsor medical schools. That's why your doctors really only know how to prescribe drugs and don't really do any type of massive education into good nutrition as being a cure. This, of course, requires that sponsors actually define the metrics for success. And the course developers are also planning to make sure that the government sponsors give teams big picture briefings about how the sponsoring organization operates, how it is funded, its overall budget, and the general issues that the agency is facing. So isn't this sweet? Like, we have Hillary Clinton talking about how we're going to suck tech industries into our internet defense, into the Department of Defense, to monitor our internet and look for terrorists. But we have them even moving further ahead. Now 13 universities about to offer this in 2017. How to hack class with government sponsorship to suck them all into the intelligence engine. Now, let's look at other ways that this technology is injuring us as a species. It's not just the ability to CRISPR and screwing up our genes potentially forever and ever as a species, eliminating Earth 1.0 and all the wonderful things that lived upon it. But we also discovered that even just our interaction with technology is causing changes to us as humans. Children of today really have a lot of difficulty in socializing because a lot of their socialization is done online. We have a lot of issues with ADD. We've talked about that dangling dopamine carrot that technology brings and how it's caused issues in little kids. I've discovered that in my own life and my own experiments. But I found a few stories that were incredibly frightening. Here's one out of the New Yorker, and this is somebody who is an adult, I would assume. He's probably about our age, maybe a Gen Xer. Says, I used to be a human being. An endless bombardment of news and gossip and images has rendered us manic information addicts. It broke me, and it might break you too, by Andrew Sullivan. Like many addicts, I sensed I had a personal crash coming, and for a decade and a half, I had been a web obsessive, publishing blog posts multiple times a day, 7 days a week, and ultimately corralling a team that curated the web every 20 minutes during peak hours. Each morning began with a full immersion in the stream of internet consciousness and news. Guys, I do this every day. Jumping from site to site, tweet to tweet, breaking news story to the hottest take, scanning countless images and videos and catching up with multiple memes And throughout the day, I'd cough up an insight or an argument or a joke about what had just occurred or what was happening right now. And at times, as events took over, I'd spend weeks manically grabbing every tiny scrap of developing story in order to fuse them together into a narrative in real time, like I do on my show every single day. Like this really, when I was reading this, I was like, oh my God. It is an unending dialogue with readers who were cavilling, praising, booing, correcting. And my brain never had been so occupied so insistently on so many different subjects in such a public way for so long. In other words, I was a very early adopter of what we now might call living in the web. And as the years went by, I realized I was no longer alone. Facebook soon gave everyone the equivalent of their own blog and their own audience, and more people got a smartphone connecting them instantly to the deluge of febrile content, forcing them to call and absorb and assimilate the online torrent as restlessly as I had once done. Twitter then emerged as a form of instant blogging of micro thoughts, and users were as addicted to the feedback as I had long been, and even more prolific. And then the apps descended like rain to inundate what was left of our free time. It was now ubiquitous. And this virtual living, this never stopping, this always updating. I remember when I decided to raise the ante on my blog in 2007 and update every half hour or so. And my editor looked at me as if I were insane. But insanity was now banality. The once unimaginable practice of the professional blogger was now the default for everyone. And if the internet killed you, I used to joke, then I would be the first to find out. And years later, the joke was running thin. In the last years of my blogging life, my health began to give out. 4 bronchial infections in 12 months had become progressively harder to kick. And vacations, such as they were, had become mere opportunities for sleep. My dreams were filled with snippets of code I had used each day to update my site, and my friends had atrophied as the time away from the web dwindled. My doctor, dispensing 1 course of antibiotics, finally laid it on the line. Did you really survive HIV, which I guess this guy had HIV, to die of the web? But the rewards were many. The audience of up to 100,000 people a day. A new media business that was actually profitable. A constant stream of things to annoy, to enlighten, or to infuriate me. A niche in the nerve center of the exploding global conversation. And a way to measure the success in big, beautiful data. And it was that constant dopamine ding! Constant dopamine bath! For the writerly ego, and if you had to reinvent yourself as a writer in the internet age, I reassured myself, then I was ahead of the curve. The problem was that I hadn't been able to reinvent myself as a human being. I tried reading books, but that skill now began to elude me. And after a couple of pages, my fingers twitched for a keyboard. I tried meditation, but my mind bucked and bridled as I tried to sit still. I got a steady workout routine, and it gave me the only relief I could measure for an hour or so a day. But over time, in this pervasive virtual world, the online clamor grew louder and louder. And although I spent hours each day alone and silent attached to a laptop, I felt as if I were in a constant, cacophonous crowd of words and images and sounds, ideas, emotions, and tirades, a wind tunnel of deafening, deadening noise, and so much of it was irresistible. As I fully understood, and he got sucked into the machine. So much of the technology was irreversible, as I also knew, but I'd begun to fear that this new way of living was actually becoming a way of not living. Ding! We're being sucked in the machine, people. How many times have I said this? And by the last few months, I had realized I had been engaging, like most addicts, in a form of denial. I long treated my online life as a supplement to my real life, an add-on, as it were. And yes, I spent many hours communicating with others as a disembodied voice, but my real life and my body were still here. But then I began to realize, as my health and happiness deteriorated, that this was not a both and a kind of situation. It was an either or. Every hour I spent online was not spent in the physical world. And every minute I was engrossed in a virtual interaction, I was not involved in a human encounter. And every second absorbed in some trivia was a less second for any form of reflection or calm or spirituality. And multitasking was but a mirage. This was a zero-sum question. I either lived as a voice online, or I lived as a human being in the world that humans had lived since the beginnings of time. Ding! Human and Earth 1.0 are on their way out the door, guys. And so this guy decided that after 15 years to actually live in reality. And this story goes on and on, but I have a couple more stories that I want to read, because I wanted to share that with you, because that's exactly the conclusions that I have come to in my own life. And it really is dizzying. It's gotten to the point where it's almost impossible to keep up with everything that is going on right now. And you really start to question how important this stuff is, as it usurps not only your real life, but your ability to get outside, to connect with nature, to get sunshine, guys. Vitamin D is extremely important to your immune system. And when you're inside on the computer all the time, not only are you not exercising, but you're not getting vitamin D. There's another story out of Scientific American. Generation Z, online and at risk. So this is the next generation, I guess. This guy might have been, if he was only online 15 years, he was probably Generation Y. I'm Generation X, about 25 years doing this. Then there's Generation Z, which are the teenagers of today. For today's teens, more online followers may mean fewer friends in real life and a path to behavioral as well as psychological problems later on. Quote, I am going to kill you while you are both asleep, unquote, says the wild-eyed 13-year-old girl as she flailed and kicked her father before biting his arm. This was the second time in less than a week that Heidi had flown into a violent rage because her parents had taken away her Chromebook and her access to social media. Remember, the addiction is real. It would also be the second time that she would have to be taken to the psychiatric emergency room. When her parents, John and Melanie, first called me for help, they described Heidi as a sweet, happy, loving girl whose teachers had always declared their favorite student. With a tendency to gravitate toward overachievers, she loved playing soccer, hiking, and taking mountain bike rides with her dad, the man she bit. John and Melanie, supportive suburban New Jersey parents with college degrees in their own tech business, were blindsided by Heidi's social media addiction. It all started when she came home in seventh grade with a Chromebook that the school had given her, they told me. Ostensibly for school purposes, Chromebook came loaded with Google Classroom, ding, which also unfortunately includes Google Chat and various Google Chat communities. And once this educational Trojan horse entered their home, John and Melanie found that Heidi was more and more preoccupied with its social media chat rooms, spending hours on them every night. And because these chat rooms were part of the Chromebook platform, they were not able to disable them. Heidi started becoming preoccupied with raunchy YouTube videos and also playing Squirrelaxy, an addictive progression game similar to Minecraft, which allowed her to be online with other Squirrelaxy players And over the course of a year, John and Melanie saw their daughter transform from a sweet, innocent girl who loved spending time with her parents into a sexualized, foul-mouthed, and violent terror. And sadly, she became a girl in need of psychiatric treatment. Now, doesn't that sound like Tay? The little innocent AI they put online that turned into the Nazi, over-sexualized, rude, foul-mouthed, violent artificial intelligence mutated by the internet as well. And if I can get to this very last story, there's one more story out of the New York Post, and this is about a young child, the age of 7 or 8, who the parents experienced the exact same issues, where the child became violent. The child woke up in the middle of the night staring catatonically into the darkness. The child had issues with socialization, and the child who used to be into music and sports wanted nothing else but to obsess over Minecraft. And at one point, and I can't get there, but I read the story a couple of times. At one point, the child in the middle of the night, when the parent came into the bedroom, was sitting awake at 2 o'clock in the morning with the glow of the light, because he'd been sneaking the computer under the covers at night to play Minecraft more, and said, "Mommy, I can see the little cubes in front of my eyes." I guess that's in Minecraft, when I sleep. Guys, how amazingly horrifying. And I saw that Minecraft is being utilized now for Microsoft to help fuel and teach their artificial intelligence. This technology has very, very impacted effect on the human mind, and I think that we are being evolved in such a way that we don't even notice it now, but this dopamine addiction is going to add to our downfall, and this is what's going to make us embrace the machine. All right, guys, well, make sure you stick around, because if you can even believe it, it is Friday, and Friday is always a wondrous day. There's going to be all kinds of great radio. Lonnie is live up next, and all kinds of brand new shows this weekend that I'm about to cut for you. So you guys have an awesome Friday, an awesome weekend, and I will catch up with you on Monday. Everybody take care.
JJ Inc. from Against the Wall.